Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gip.
We usually start off this show by reading emails from our listeners all around the world. Mm-hmm. And we got a lot of those emails this week, but I'm going to start instead with a different form of communication. These are YouTube comments. You can watch our interviews on DW Podcasts. That's a channel on YouTube. And sometimes we make little YouTube shorts out of those. We got couple comments on smartphones and people blasting music or podcasts or whatever or videos.
Yeah.
On public transportation restaurants.
The research was on the erosion of social norms. That was Anna Tirion, Dutch researcher, speaking to us from London.
Yeah, so I'll just read a couple of the comments that came in because people feel strongly about this one. One guy wrote, UK as well, meaning this is not just a problem that we face here in Germany, or I talked about how it's really a problem in Italy. Hmm. UK as well. Nobody gives a It helps people pass the time till they can be alone again, I guess. Nothing much good to see or hear in the real world at the moment with the way people behave now. Another commenter chimed in, lots of people doing this in New York City. Another one saying, it's crazy to see these kids, that kind of tells you something about the age of the commenter, these kids blasting that ish in an insurance office. I don't know the word ish. I guess I'm out of it these days. I don't know what that means. But anyway, they don't know they bother anyone because they never look at anyone's face. That's a real generational conflict right there, I guess. And the final person, I think it's important to end on this one, said, I agree. Just wear headphones.
Yeah.
Headphones, everyone.
Pretty easy solution there.
They were invented decades ago. They're even better now. They're noise canceling. Wear headphones.
I got an email from somebody writing to su@dw.com, and this was with regard to the research on swearing. We spoke with Shelia Kennison a couple weeks back.
Oh, and I just dropped a swear word in there. It's bleeped.
I was going to say, yeah, that would be a perfect transition to this next little bit. This is a guy named Chris. He wrote, gentlemen, I had just entered the lobby of a Toronto hotel from the pouring rain and couldn't get my umbrella to close. Naturally, I called it a just as a stylish businesswoman walked by from behind me. Is shame at least a kind of form of arousal? Or in her case, pity and disgust? Thanks for another intriguing and funny show. And the science there was that it wakes you up.
It emotionally arouses you.
When you say swear words or curse words or hear them, it's a form of arousal.
Yeah, not the arousal that has any sort of sexual connotation. It's waking your whole body up, and we've just done that to you by reading some of these comments. So keep in mind that, that was some research we talked about on our last show. If you want to calm down after this, do some breathing exercises or meditation or mindfulness, even yoga, that will help calm you after what we just did to you.
We're going to stick with the effects of swearing on our psyche now, not arousal, but pain. What swearing does to our perception of pain. They looked at this at Kalamazoo College on the other side of Lake Michigan. I'm from Wisconsin. On the other side of Lake Michigan is Kalamazoo College. Mm-hmm. So great that this research came out of there. They had 111 participants, and they split them into groups. One group put their non-dominant hand in a bucket of ice water, in the freezing water.
Ow, it's cold.
It that hurts, yeah,
pain,
right?
Pain.
And then they said the F word. At 1 second intervals. So bam, 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 swearing the whole time.
We are going to email these researchers and ask for that audio. A 1 second interval F-bomb.
Well, hold on. The other group put their hand in the ice water and said the word flat. So instead of the F word, they said flat, 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 flat.
An absurd situation to be in for the participants.
Okay, so that was experiment one. Experiment two, they did the same thing. So non-dominant hand goes in the bucket of ice water. And then with the dominant hand, either they raise the middle finger, was the one group, and the other group...
The FU gesture.
...raised the index finger. In each of these experiments, they measured how long these people could keep their hand in the bucket of ice water until the pain was intolerable. And then they had them rate the level of pain. So the perception of pain and their endurance of pain. Mm-hmm. Two things. Mm-hmm. When they were saying the F-bomb, they were able to keep their hand in the ice water for way longer, and their perception of pain was lower. When they had their middle finger up, same thing, almost exact same levels, increased levels of pain tolerance and pain endurance.
So it's not just saying these words, it's expressing
a taboo act. So when you've got your middle finger up, you're through your mind's eye, you're saying the F word.
You keep flipping me off nonstop here. So I guess you're raising your pain threshold right now.
If I had my hand in a bucket of ice water, or if I was, I don't know, pinching myself, I would be able to do it longer, and that pain that I was feeling would be less painful if I'm flipping you off.
So that's a positive with swearing, with cursing.
The next time that you hurt yourself out there, or have your hand in ice water and have to keep it in there for too long, swear. Swear or flip something off, it will help.
And just a reminder of the original research we talked about, that if someone is swearing way more often than normal, or mm-hmm. you are yourself, it's a sign that you may be exhausted or in an emotional state that's just not good, and yeah. that you should be aware of that as an indicator of being in that state,
yeah.
or your friend, and just watch out for it. Couple quick ones for me here. Two of them are about sleep, and they kind of...
Oh, great.
Well, they kind of state the obvious, but maybe reconfirm what we need confirmed again. Mm-hmm. One was from the Karolinska Institute in
Sweden.
Stockholm, Sweden, yeah. And what they determined by forcing about 400 people to sleep for no longer than 4 hours per night, that's mm-hmm. a really short night, mm-hmm. twice in a row, that their subjective age, the way they feel, the age they feel, increased by 4.5 years. So take your age now and then sleep two nights in a row for 4 hours or less. You will feel almost 5 years older after that.
Wow.
And they did this a number of different ways. It's kind of a sliding scale. That was sort of the big takeaway. But the other thing is when they had people rating how they felt from alert all the way down to extremely sleepy. If you're extremely sleepy, if you're at the bottom, if you're as tired as you get, then subjectively you are going to feel 10 years older than you did before.
So if you're in a constant state, if this is a...
Yeah.
Just the way you go through life, like me, for instance, I'm an insomniac. I never sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm always... That's
you're always
funny.
10 years older.
I told you, remember when you asked me how old I feel? There was that research on that, and I said 56. Maybe yep,
that makes sense. Yeah. Maybe it's connected to the lack of sleep. We're going to get to the insomnia in just a second. The last thing I'll say on here is we also talked about this on the show. Just a reminder that when you are massively sleep deprived, anywhere from I think the standard that they set was 24 hours, that this is like driving under the influence of alcohol, like driving drunk. Be aware of that as well, especially if you suffer from insomnia. Mm-hmm. This is going to affect how you drive. So the next study, again on sleep, was literally about insomnia. And here they looked at 4,000 people, mostly Europeans, 9 different countries. And this was about who can actually get to sleep at night and then sleep for 6 to 9 hours. And I'll just get to the conclusion. Participants who were persistently active were less likely to report difficulty initiating sleep than...
Let's get a definition here. Active, what does that mean?
Active, and I was happily surprised by this. Twice a week, you exercise 1 hour.
That's active.
That's active. The sad thing is only 25% of the participants, of the 4,000 participants, met that criteria. Yeah. And again, the data, when you really get into the data, it gets a little messy. All these different countries. And then also some people started out active, then they became inactive. They started, or the other way around. Yeah. It went over 10 years. Another limitation is that people are self-reporting. They're obviously not hooking up 4,000 people to EKGs and measuring all or watching them sleep. Yeah. Still, if you're having trouble sleeping, like our good friend and colleague, Cosmin, who was just talking to us about how he's jet-lagged and has been jet-lagged for 6 weeks and wakes up in the middle of the night, exercise. It's not much, 1 hour twice a week, and that should get you through it.
Yeah,
we're short on time here. I'll make this really quick, but this is possibly the most important thing I'm going to say in this little session here. April 8th is a solar eclipse, a total solar eclipse. It's North America that's going to get it. It kind of goes from the U.S. state of Texas up to Cleveland and catches a tiny little corner of Northeast Canada. And because that eclipse is going to happen, over the 3 days of that eclipse, there's going to be a 31% increase in car accidents.
I saw this news too.
I couldn't believe that it jumped that much, so I went into it. And
people
it was,
heading to see the eclipse?
That's it, yeah. So it's not...
In a rush? I got to see the eclipse? I got to see the eclipse? They're not watching the road?
That's it. It's a combination of factors. It's not because of the darkness of the eclipse. It goes... You know, an eclipse lasts, I don't know, 4 minutes, right? Yeah. That's not what's causing this. The data was from the U.S., and basically the last time this happened, 2017, 2 million Americans traveled in some form to go see it. And in some ways, that makes a solar eclipse a lot like some of the other events where we're aware that traffic accidents go up, like Christmas, yeah, or New Year's Eve, or whatever other celebration you have in your country. But it's more than that, because at those events, you're typically going to someone's place that you know.
Yeah.
You know the roads, you know where you're going, everything's clear.
Well, everything's fixed, right? You know the time.
Yeah, and exactly.
Although you can be rushing to get to Christmas.
You might be rushing, but what's different about this is when people travel to go see a solar eclipse, you're going into territory that you're going to a spot that you've chosen. You've never been there. Yeah. You don't know the roads. You don't know the lay of the land. You get lost. You're rushing. And the other aspect of it is that a lot of people, particularly in North America, travel long distances and to get to these events. And most of the accidents tend to happen between 2 and 4 hours into the drive.
Okay.
Be aware of that. If this, the greatest thing the show could ever do is save like one life, right?
If you're heading to see the eclipse, be careful. Drive carefully.
If you know someone who's going to head there, tell them about that.
Yeah.
And it's not just their own behavior, it's the people around them are all going to be kind of crazy. Sometimes the eclipse happens, right, Everyone's in a good mood.
Let's make this the safest eclipse ever.
Let's make it the safest eclipse ever. Do you have anything to say on the solar eclipse or sleep, insomnia?
Swearing.
Swearing.
Pain.
Pain. Any of that. Let us know, su@dw.com, or head over to the YouTube channel and leave us a comment.